This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
Has there ever been a less attractive NBA field in the playoffs than this year? The eight teams left, have you sat there and looked at them? We got LA's stepchild, the Clippers, the Nets, perennial jokes, the Bucks, the Nuggets, the Jazz, the Suns. It is the dance of the lemons, yet somehow I'm fascinated with it. It is amazing. All the unwanted teams rolled up into one.
I think we've chosen the Suns as the team of Danny and Gallant.
Except I hate that owner. But I do like the Suns. I hate the owner. Sarver's terrible. It's Danny Gallant. It's time to bring in Michael Bumpus. His Lakers would have made this a whole lot more sexy. They just didn't hold up their end against the Suns. It's time for Blue 42.
Here we go.
This is Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, GU corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Good morning, Bump. How are you now?
Good morning, fellas. I'm doing well. I'm officially on the Utah Jazz bandwagon.
What?
I had to pick a
no
team.
No way.
No.
I'm going with the Jazz. I'm going with the boring team from Utah. Donovan Mitchell is special. I enjoy
that's
watching
true.
Him. I'm feeling the Jazz. The Jazz or the Hawks? I'm going with the team no one picks.
Okay. You might be the only person that would voluntarily pick Utah if given a selection of eight teams, right? Because no one even plays as them in NBA Jam, and they have Stockton and Malone.
Yeah, but Stockton and Malone were herbs. Like, both of those dudes both of those dudes are total herbs. I could root for the Jazz if it wasn't for Gobert. Gobert drives me up. I don't like Gobert. I just always root for Gobert to get yammed on.
Question one for you, Michael Bumpus. What was your biggest takeaway from Russell Wilson's State of the Union yesterday?
What did people expect Russell to say? Did you really expect Russell Wilson to come out and say, yeah, I was unhappy, man. You know, I had to let these guys know. Either you make me happy or I'm out of here. They had to make moves. Heck no. Russell did exactly what got him to where he is today. He danced around a couple tough questions. He loved up his teammates. He loved up his coaching staff. Most importantly, he loved up the city and the 12s to reassure people, I love you guys. He told a couple lies. I want to be here the rest of my career. That could change next year. You don't know. We all saw your guy in Boston, Paul Kyrie Irving, get in front of the crowd and say, look, I plan on re-signing. I'm going to be here for a while. Athletes do what's convenient for them in that moment. And in that moment, the first time talking to the press, really, he said, look, this is where I want to be. Then he said, I never requested a trade. That one kind of got me because I'm like, all right, even if you came out publicly and said that, you didn't do enough because I don't remember you saying, hey, I didn't request a trade. You allowed your agents to put four teams out there. You stirred up the pot a little bit. But end of the day, he did exactly what he was supposed to do. He said, I'm going to lead by example. In reality, he said that like 30 times. You know, he said people blew it out of proportion. I don't think we blew it out of proportion. I think that now that you're with your team, you're back home, you have a job to do. And I expect Russell Wilson to do his job. He's going to show up. He's going to work hard. He's going to lead. He's going to prepare. He's going to do all he can to get ready for the season now that he's committed. But did you really think he was going to come out and admit fault and apologize? He didn't even say he needed to talk to his old lineman. That's what got me. He goes, no, I didn't have to talk to my old lineman. You know, they understood. I don't think they understood. It's just that because of where you are today, OTAs are going, minicamp's about to start. It is what it is, and he understands that. So the fact that he's showing up every day, in his mind, puts everyone at ease. And that presser was just to let everybody know, look, the robot is back. I'm here to work. All is well. At least that's what it seems like.
Does he look better or worse after that? And I know he didn't say anything different and didn't. Do you think, how do you view him after that press conference?
No differently. I view him as a professional. I view him as a guy who is going to say the right things, especially when the camera's in front of him. Now, when you're speaking through an agent and you got somebody standing in front of you taking the bullets, man, you're going to woof. There's a guy on my team, Ryan Kensock, smallest guy on the team. When we're in the club and there's about 10 to 15 of us with him, man, he is woofing. He's talking that stuff. He's 2 feet behind us. by yourself and you got a one-on-one, that tone changes a little bit. And that's all that we saw right there. He had his agent in front of him. He's like, look, man, hey, tell him this. No, I mean, I ain't going for this. They need to help me out, man. Hook me up. And then you get in front of the pressure like, you know what, guys? I'm really happy to be here, and I'm going to get back to work. Professional. He's a professional.
Michael Bumpus just came the closest to encapsulating the reality of what happened.
The reality
of us. However much time we spent, that's exactly right. And in fact, I would suggest that in the future, Russ goes, oh, man, come on. You guys know that was off-season Russ. Off-season Russ yes. is a little different than regular season Russ. Off-season Russ posts a lot of pictures on Twitter. Off-season Russ does some goofy things
Unlimited.
And sometimes makes some headlines. I'm back as regular season Russ. Don't worry. Regular season Russ to the rescue. Back with my cliches and very boring press conferences.
Boom. Perfect, Danny.
Wyman used to have this description of there was Night Dave and Morning Dave. And Morning Dave really hated Night Dave. Because Night Dave would do things like drink that extra glass of whiskey. Night Dave would eat ice cream too late at night. And he would wake up in the morning and Morning Dave would be furious with Night Dave. Off-season Russ and regular season Russ. Like, regular season Russ gets in there. He's like, off-season Russ kind of made a mess here. Off-season Russ left a lot for me to clean up.
Exactly. Everyone has their alter ego, right? When I was coming up, my boys called me Richard. Like, I used to get into a zone, and I became Richard. And they're like, is Richard here?
I remember you telling us this.
You know, and we all had our own personalities. My boy, name is Ross, he was Bruce. We're like, hey, man, is Bruce here today or what? What are we doing? Everybody has that other side of them when they're around the right people, when you're in the right environment. And I think that's what we saw Russell Wilson. Like you said, that was off-season Russ. Now the professional is back, who's going to dance around questions, who's going to keep it PC, who's going to make sure his teammates are happy. But who is going to show up and work hard every single day?
Question two. Did we find out any more about Russ, what Russell and DK have meant when they talk about Shane Waldron's offense being intricate?
I think we found a little bit, right? Russell said the use of a bunch of different personnel. So what does that mean? Two tight ends, one tight end, moving DK around, maybe Lock is in a slot. Personnel means getting different guys on the field, putting them in different positions. So it sounds like there's going to be a lot of personnel changes. And then he's talking about using the whole field. There were times when we watched the offense last year and guys are just flying downfield. 15, 20 yards downfield. There's nothing underneath. So now maybe there's always a bailout for Russell Wilson. There's a guy in the fly. There's intermediate. There's a deep. Using the whole field and giving him more options. And then you combine that with what DK said, talking about routes you've never seen before. I'm not really buying that. You know, I spoke to a guy on Twitter. He goes, Bump, man, you're blowing this route thing out of proportion. I'm like, really? And what I said was, I think we'll see more routes that bend instead of break. You know what I mean? Break is nice and sharp. Boom, get your spot. Bend means you can kind of float to an area. There's still going to be your traditional routes. I'm not saying they're going to throw away traditional football, but they're going to be a little bit of wrinkles. So with DK and Russell's kind of conferences combined, I say there's going to be more personnel or different personnel. There's going to be more options for Russell to throw the football, and you'll see a couple of routes that just aren't traditional football routes. If that means intricate to them, that's what I got out of it.
Is there any position that you see them specifically using a little bit more? Tight end position's been an interesting one over the last couple of seasons because there's been injury, there's been turnover there too. That's one I'm wondering about, just given Shane Waldron's background as a tight end coach and obviously Gerald Everett having played with Shane Waldron before, now being in the mix too. We haven't talked about him that much considering he is probably their biggest offensive free agent acquisition.
It's got to be the tight end spot. It has to be. That's the offensive position last year when it comes to guys catching the football whose production was the lowest, right? You had receivers, you had running backs. When Carson's healthy, he's in there. But at the tight end spot, what do you do? So now you bring in a guy who can line up on the outside, who can line up in the slot and put his hand in the dirt. You're going to see him motioning and shifting and changing the strength of the formation. You're going to see screens to the tight end. I can't remember the last time we saw a screen to the tight end. The tight end has to be the position that is going to take the biggest step in this offense because you had two receivers who went for 1,000. I mean, if you had a running back before this year, had back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons, who else touches the football? It's that tight end spot. Now, if Disley can stay healthy and you combine him with Gerald Everett, there are some things that they can do. So I think that's where they get intricate as well, is the way they use their tight ends and the pre-snap stuff. I watch film, you know, how many times Gerald Everett went from left to right, right to left, return motions. Like, you're asking the defense to communicate and shift. What position does that most often in the Shane Waldron offense, at least from what I saw with the Rams, is the tight end.
Question number three. Maura, can we get cut number 13 ready to go? This just made me laugh. Let's have a little bit of fun with Russell Wilson's press conference yesterday. He said certain words a good 50, 60, I've lost count of them times, but this cut just made me laugh. Here's Russell Wilson talking about the reality.
The reality is, you know, I think calls were getting thrown around and this and that, and I think that's just a reality. But I think at the end of the day, the real reality is that I'm here, and I'm here to win, and I'm here to win it all.
I mean, he closed that out perfectly, but the real reality of all of the, I guess, go-to words bump that maybe you had when you had a microphone in front of your face. The go-to, I'm trying to get around this question as best I can. Did you have a favorite word?
Favorite word? Maybe a phrase. You know, end of the day. End of the day, I'm going to come out here, I'm going to work hard. End of the day, you know, that team was better than we were, you know, when it came, when we were on fourth down or whatnot. End of the day was probably my go-to because it's kind of like the stamp and the seal. Like, yes, I said all this stuff before all this other stuff happened, but at the end of the day, I'm going to show up and I'm going to work hard. I think that was probably my go-to.
At the end of the day is such a fascinating saying, too. When everything is taken into consideration is what it means.
Truth be told is another one that I like. Truth be told.
Yeah.
It's like, does that mean you're lying to me in the other instances? Truth be told. If you've got to tell me you're telling the truth, should I be more skeptical of the other stuff you say? I've also found that when a player starts saying execution, when they start talking about execution, you can probably stop writing down what they're saying because they've probably shifted into autopilot. If they're saying, like, we've just got to perform the plays better, like, if that's, because that's what they're, when you're talking about execution, they're saying that we have to do what we're instructed. We have to follow directions better. You got a pretty firm sign that they're just saying some words so they don't have to talk to you anymore. They don't have to talk to you.
Or they're saying it because they don't want to get specific and throw guys under the bus, right? If I'm a quarterback, hey, we just got to get better with execution. Where I could be like, man, my receiver had a 10-yard out. He ran it at 5. Man, my lineman was supposed to slide this protection, but they didn't. So it's kind of a way to help your teammates out, too, if you feel like you don't want to throw somebody under the bus.
The bigger the problem, the more general the answers.
Yeah.
The bigger the problem, the more, hey, we've just all got to work together better. You're like, really? Because it looks like you guys are about 20 pounds lighter than your opponents at pretty much every position. And you're also coming out of every game getting your butts absolutely kicked. But it's just working together better? Like, you just need to follow instructions better? I don't know. It seems like there might be something else going on here.
Maura, can we get cut number 4 ready to go as well? Because as we go through this press conference, there were some moments that I feel like you saw some part of Russell Wilson. This was probably the realest that Russell Wilson got, right? Where at the very end, he was asked about the way that he looked at the Super Bowl. Here's Russ.
No, listen, when I'm sitting in the Super Bowl and watching the Super Bowl, like, I should be pissed off, right? I mean, at the end of the day, you should be wanting to sit there and watch the game and want to be there and want to play in the game, especially when you played in it twice. You know, and it's one of those things like, man, we got to get back here.
Probably his most human moment in the entirety of said press conference.
PG-13, Russ. Wow, regular season Russ does not usually veer into PG-13 territory, and he did right there.
Good, he should do more of that. Just a little more, a little sprinkle every now and then, once a week when he talks to the press. Sprinkle that in there. I bet you if he were to do that, his teammates will look at him a different way. I'm sure they respect him. Russell's a hard-working dude. I mean, he doesn't mail it in. That's another word, right? Mail it in. We talk about phrases.
Yeah.
But, yeah, show a little bit more of that. You know, the more human he can get in the eyes of his teammates, I think the better it is for the team in the long run.
It's always interesting how players, that's Blue 42. Michael Bumpus here with us on Wednesdays and Fridays. We've got Brock here the rest of the week. It's always interesting how a player deals with sort of a fur that's been created. Because the fact is almost everyone feels when they're the subject of one of those sort of back and forth media stories that escalates like it did, they feel like, okay, it was exaggerated. What was actually going on wasn't, like, maybe that's true, but it's also, you're a pretty important player in a league and a franchise player for this team, and that's, people care a lot, and that's why it's going to become a big deal. How the player handles it when they come back. Like, some guys, like Richard Sherman, it did not bother him. Like, he really, it did not bother him. You would ask him about it, like, all that happened, and he would be like, well, yeah, you know, that's one of those things that happened, and sometimes he'd lie about why it happened, but he didn't fixate on him. It didn't bother him how he was characterized. He was able to move on from it, and that was one of the things that I always thought. Other guys, like Terrell Owens, was constantly, especially toward the end of his career, felt like, everybody's always picking on me. Why is everybody always like, well, it's like, well, Terrell, you spent the first 10 years of your career making sure that everybody stared at you. Like, you can't really then complain about them paying attention to you later in your career. I think listening to how Russ handled it yesterday, I think he was trying to explain where he was coming from some, but he was also stung by the fact that people thought he wanted out. That was one of the things that came across most clearly to me. That bothered him, and he wanted that cleared up. He did not want people to think that he asked for a trade.
Russell was the type of guy who loves to be loved. He wants people to like him. And there's nothing wrong with that. Richard Sherman was the type who just didn't care. It was like, look, man, I don't care if you like me or not. I'm going to show up and I'm going to ball out. And there's so many different type of ways to be successful. And I think a football team is the perfect example of that. You got different height, size, weights, colors, race. I mean, you got 90 something guys at one point in a locker room, and everyone's trying to find their way, their lane to be successful. Russell, he's a likable guy, or at least he wants to be a likable guy. He's a nice guy. He's going to help the community. He's going to do all the things that you kind of expect a franchise quarterback to do. But then you have your Pac-Man Jones. You know, you got your Shermans. You got guys who just do their things a bit differently. I don't know if it's where they come from, how they were raised, whatever it is, something in their lives have created the person that you see today, and you can still be successful doing it. So you got to be in your comfort zone as a player. You got to know who you are and be okay with it. And I think Russell wants to be a guy who's liked and is okay with coming out there and saying and sounding like a robot and saying and doing all the right things. That's just who he is. It's worked for him so far.
Did it work here? Did it work in getting some of those teammates back on his side? I'm assuming that there have to have been some sort of private conversations about this over the last 3.5 months, because we're talking about closer to half a year than not. Do you think that he was able to do that? Because it doesn't matter what it does for me, for you, for Danny. It's about that side of things, I think, that's most important right now.
I think there are some guys who probably felt some type of way about it, who felt Russ should have handled it differently. But nobody has as much leverage in this organization as a player than Russell Wilson. He can say what he wants to say during the offseason. As soon as he shows up, as soon as he steps out onto the field and he gets in that huddle and he becomes the leader of this team again, it don't even matter. You fall in line. Russ is at a point of his career. He don't have to go and check in with the number two and the number three and make sure you guys are good, man. How you doing? But he don't have to do that no more, man. He's a franchise guy. He is the guy. There are a few I felt like he spoke to. He said he didn't talk to the O-line, but he also said that Dwayne Brown was one of his best friends. Guarantee you he spoke to Dwayne Brown. Guarantee you he spoke to Dwayne Brown. The third lineman on the depth chart, probably not. Didn't talk to him. Doesn't really care to talk to him. As long as he's giving him a good look on scout, he's doing his job, he's good to go.
Let's go to cut number six. And this is where Russ was asked specifically about the perception or the fact that he did say he was frustrated at getting hit so much. He was asked about calling out his offensive line. Here was his answer.
Not at all about the offensive line. I think that I also mentioned that, you know, the reality is that I can do better too. You know, I think that's we're all trying to find ways to win. We're all trying to find ways to be better, you know. And I think that, you know, listen, Dwayne Brown's one of my closest friends, man. That guy's everything to me. You know, I think about D. Lou and what a player he was last year. He's going into his second year, You know, I think about a guy like Posick, who's been tremendous up front and how smart he's been. I'm excited about Gabe Jackson. He's been amazing in the Zoom calls. He's been amazing in his approach, how tough he is. I've watched a lot of film of him, you know, and just how good he's been. You know, and then obviously Shell over there at right tackle, you know, and you know, got a lot of other guys that can play too as well. So I think that, you know, when you think about, you know, a guy like Kyle who stepped in to play center for us in a big game last year
against
the Rams and, you know, played injured and played dinged up and all that.
I gotta say,
that's pretty good.
That was incredible.
Not only that, he went left to right, right?
He did.
Like how they're gonna line. He went left to right. Went from Dwayne Brown to Damian Lewis to Ethan Posick to Gabe Jackson and then on over to Brandon Shell, and then we looped back to get the backup center. That was some solid work.
Impressive.
By
That's how you do it, man. Great leaders take care of the guys that they're going to depend on the most. Now, I know back in March it didn't seem like that, but Russ knew this was his opportunity. You think Russ showed up without a plan? You think Russ said, all right, I'm going to wing this. Here we go. No, man, he knew, like, I got to show these guys love. Got to talk about my coaches. Got to talk about the city. I got to make sure people know that I did not request a trade. That was not me. That was my agent doing his own thing. Man, he you know what he did? He executed. He executed the game plan.
At the end of the day.
I agree with you, Bump. I think the one thing, though, that didn't go according to plan or that he didn't anticipate was how that was going to be received. Because, as you said, like, he had to make it clear he didn't ask for a trade. But his agent gave four teams he would accept a trade to ESPN. And that was something. And when Russ was asked, well, if you didn't ask to request a trade, like, how did those four teams get out there? And in cut number one, his answer to that, I think we saw he did have a plan. The reaction or the way it came off, he was still trying to do some damage control because he did not like the perception that he'd asked for a trade.
Well, I think there was a lot of confusion because the reality is that I forget. I think I was in the Bahamas or somewhere, and everybody was saying that I requested a trade, and that wasn't true. So we made it clear that I did not request a trade. And then there was teams being flown around that I was going to go to those teams, this and that. And so, you know, I think that, you know, when you look back at it, you know, it's part of I don't know. It's part of it, unfortunately. You know, and I think that, you know, more than anything else, you know, that I got my wish, you know, in the sense that I've always wanted to play here. That's where I am. That's where I am right now. And that's what I've always hoped for ever since 2012 when I put all the names in a hat and pulled out the Seahawks out of a hat, you know. And then sure enough, about, I don't know, 30 days later, the Seattle Seahawks picked me. So, you know, that's my mission. That's my goal. And that's why I'm here today and ready to roll.
So here's how that lines up with the timeline, and it's worth going back and reflecting on it because that's the week that the story in The Athletic came out, and it was the story that had the detail about him leaving the team meeting when they were getting ready for the Arizona Cardinals game, and it reflected some of the tension that had been within the team, and it wasn't just, hey, Russ is mad. Like, there was, here's some of the other things that have gone on. One section of that story mentioned the potential of a trade, and there were at least five, and it might have been six teams. It was the four teams that Russ ended up mentioning, but Miami was also on there. That story comes out, and Russ's side reacted to that as like, whoa, we haven't talked about any of those teams. We didn't talk to the reporter about these. And not only that, but one of these teams, like, that list isn't what we've talked about in our back and forth with the Seahawks of may have been escalating back and forth with the front office. So Mark Rogers is like, I'm going to call ESPN and tell them what the four teams we would accept a trade to are, which was the Raiders, the Bears, the Cowboys, and the Saints. The Dolphins, which had been mentioned in the Athletic article, weren't on there. Then Schefter reports that, and these are the four teams he would accept a trade to. And then there's the clarification that Schefter sends of saying he's not requesting a trade, but if he were to be traded, here's where he would go. So that was, if there was one move that was absolutely botched on Russ's side, that was it. Because
that's probably Mark Rogers, right?
Yeah, I mean, you reacted. You got your side reacted to a report that mentioned possible changes, and you guys kind of flipped out about that. There's more to get into with Russell Wilson, his first press conference. But coming up next, it's time for This or That, a Friday tradition that has taken Danny and Gallant by storm. That's ahead.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
I'm not sure what I like more. This segment, which I do love, or the track that begins. On the day of my death, whenever that is, and hopefully many years from now, if you play The Choice Is Yours by the Black Sheep, I will nod my head. 85-year-old, drinking Ensure. Here they come, yo. Here they come. It's time for This or That. Maura gives us subjects. We pick the answers. Let's go.
All right. Good afternoon, guys. Good morning. Oh, it's still morning. Man, I'm ahead of myself. Sorry.
It's Friday.
Happy Friday.
That's why.
All right. Let's start with this. With the addition of Julio Jones to the Titans, who has the better wide receiver core, the Titans or the Seahawks?
Ooh. That's a good question.
You've got Julio Jones, A.J. Brown, and Josh Reynolds as pretty much the big three in Tennessee. DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and probably either Freddie Swain or Dwayne Eskridge in Seattle.
Titans. One of the best wide receivers ever in Julio Jones. With A.J. Brown, you have a guy who you could argue has been as good as DK Metcalf since he came into the league. And Josh Reynolds is more proven than Dwayne Eskridge.
Let me ask this, though. Is it based on what we think they're going to do this year or what they've done so far? Because two of the three receivers in Tennessee are new to that offense. Like, they're more experienced, you're right, but they're new to that offense. And I would actually, if you gave me the choice of which trio is going to have more productivity, I'm taking Seattle's
but
this year.
Isn't that a Tannehill versus Wilson thing?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to, the quarterback. Kind of come down to the quarterback, man. But A.J. is a monster down the field. We know what Julio can do. Josh Reynolds is great in the slot. I got to go with the Titans right now just because I've seen what Josh Reynolds can do. And I believe in this dude. I was hoping that the Hawks actually take a look at him. So Josh Reynolds is the deciding factor, right? If Josh Reynolds was on the Seahawks, I would say the Seahawks. But that number three receiver is solidified in Tennessee with Julio and A.J. I go with the Titans.
Can we take a moment to just acknowledge that Ole Miss had both DK Metcalf and A.J. Brown and didn't do much? I mean, I guess at that point they had Hugh Freeze there, right? Who might have had some other things on his mind. Who might have not been... He's probably not the best judge of things. He's not got the best head on his shoulders. But you have those two dudes on the same team? How did you not tear people up, even in the SEC?
Because it's the SEC, and you still need to block these crazy defensive linemen. You still got to go into a stadium full of 95,000 people. I mean, and
you're still Ole Miss too. You just like looking pretty. That offense should have been better though. Yes.
Yeah.
Is it Ole Miss is better than Mississippi State though? Mississippi State's kind of like the agricultural school.
Yeah,
right?
They're the
like
one with Ole Miss cowbells.
Yeah. Ole Miss has got like what? There's the Faulkner went there. Or is it Hemingway? It was Faulkner that went there.
Ole Miss is about as southern as it gets in that they are all about the appearances. I mean, you got dudes dressing up in tuxes to games and stuff like that. They like to look good, and then, yeah, it's not really deep, if that makes sense. Boom, roasted.
Yeah, right. Paul taking it to Mississippi.
Yeah. We'll be going there, so, yeah.
Talk about rickets.
Next up, guys, Kyler Murray says he's still open to playing baseball. Better MLB player if they chose fully to commit to that path, Russell Wilson or Kyler Murray?
Well, that's Kyler, right? I mean, Kyler's still younger, and he was a higher overall draft pick. And
well, you could choose to look at Russ if he would have chosen to right after. You can put them both at their height.
Here's the thing. We saw Russ in minor league baseball, and Russ couldn't hit, right? I mean, he didn't hit. And that's not to say that he wouldn't have if he'd taken a full year and focused on it. But you saw 2 years of minor league baseball, and he did not hit. At no point did he hit, which you have to do, right? Like, you got to be able to clobber the ball. He went to the Tri-City Dust Devils and did not hit.
The reason why I pick Russell Wilson is because I feel like he can deal with failure better than a lot of people. And I think you look at Kyler Murray's body language after he fails. He has a pouty face. He's on the sideline. His body language is all bad. Baseball, you got to deal with failure. And I feel like Russell can just tap into a place that a lot of people can't and just deal with it and stay focused and keep grinding. Like, his approach in football, I think, would help in baseball.
That's a great point, Bump. And now that you say that, can we get Russell Wilson and Jared Kelnick to hang out with each other? Think that would help Jared Kelnick out at all?
Jared, why not us, Kelnick? Man?
Do you want Kelnick to mellow out? We didn't get a chance to ask Jerry that yesterday. Like, is there, and it kind of, Jerry kind of said it though. It was like, have a little, but he'll have a little better response and not get frustrated in chasing results. Do you think they want him to chill?
I think you got to be who you are.
Yeah.
I think you have to be exactly who you are. That approach has gotten him this far. You don't lose it after, what, 28 at-bats of not hitting the ball. I think you just stick to it, and you'll figure it out.
All right, guys, this one is this or that, or this or that. Multiple options here. Of the four major professional sports leagues in the U.S., with the playoffs going on right now, kind of thought this was an interesting question. Which is the hardest sport to officiate? NBA, NHL, MLB, or NFL?
Dude, it's the NFL. There's so much happening. And there's so much, like, of all of the different things that go on in a play, I think the NFL is the hardest to officiate.
I think it's the NHL.
Really?
You have to skate, first off. None of those guys look like they are particularly old. Second, you have to separate on a regular basis dudes from fighting one another.
They don't separate them. Once they start fighting, they get away from them.
Hockey, things are moving way, way faster than they are in football, too.
Here's the problem with Paul's answer. We pretend like this is, I had to learn to skate. Like, he's pretending like the learning, like, that dude grew up on skates. It's not like skating is new to him. He's probably a Swede or born in some boondock town up in Canada where, like, that's second nature to him.
Right.
So it's basically like asking him to walk.
But if you're moving in one direction and all of a sudden things change directions, you can't change those directions so quickly. You don't exactly have the agility to perhaps have that 360 degrees of vision that you would if you were on a football field or on a basketball court.
Bump, you maybe bump, have to be in the best here. Shape to be an NHL ref.
Yeah, you can be fat, right? Like, they got little, they look like they spend some time at Tim Hortons. Eh?
I'm going with the NBA simply because you don't know what's real in the NBA anymore. Did he foul him? Did he really foul him? How bad was the foul? Is this a flagrant? What are they going to say upstairs? Should we kick him out the game? It's becoming a show. It's becoming European soccer out there, and I don't know what's real. I can't tell you the last time I saw a legit foul, and I'm like, this is a good hard foul. I'm like, yeah, he fouled him hard, but damn, dude is acting like he broke his back. Or, you know, there's a lot of pressure being an NBA ref. I would say football has the most chaos because there's so much going on. But as far as just the integrity of the game, I think the NBA is right up there.
I would be a tyrant as an NBA official. Like, I would be like, if I find out you flopped, if I find out on the replay, I'm you're not getting four straight calls. Like, they could clobber you and make you bleed, and I'm not giving you a call. If you fool me, you'll fool me once, but you're going to pay for it the next four times, and I'll tell them I'm not going to call any fouls for you. That is this or that. Three different answers. More, what's your answer on the sports leagues? Which one's toughest? We'll hear that coming up next. It's Danny and Gallant. We'll get back to a little bit of Russell Wilson, and maybe we should give him a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt. That's one texter's thought. That's ahead.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Michael Bump is hanging out with us. Friday, got to get down on Friday. We will hear from you guys at 9 o'clock. You'll get the call in with your reactions to what's going on in the wake of the Russell Wilson State of the Union that we saw yesterday.
Do you think we're going to get calls? We've tried this the last couple times, and most of these jackals out here haven't taken us up on it. So if you're one of those people that's been texting about how we need to shut up or you have your own thoughts on it, please plan to call in at 9 o'clock.
We want to give you the floor. I have a question, guys. Because I know there are some people that are listening right now that do legitimately believe what Russell Wilson is saying. They feel like things maybe have been blown out of proportion. Here's Russell Wilson implying that that's how he feels about things at the very least in yesterday's press conference.
Well, I think first of all, you know, obviously I love Seattle. I love playing here. You know, I've had a great career here so far. I've always wanted to play here for my whole career. Obviously, I think there were some, you know, unfortunate frustrations after the season. Obviously, you want to win it all and do it all and do everything you can, you know. And I think everybody on our team does. We all want to win it. And, you know, I think unfortunately it got a little, a little bit blown out of proportion a little bit. I think that my ultimate goal is to win. You know, I get paid to win. I get paid to find a way. I get paid for us to be able to make a play, you know, continue to find ways to win. And we've done a lot of that over the years. And, you know, the mission is to continue to do the same, but do a little bit more.
A little bit blown out of proportion, a little bit. And going back to what we talked about a little bit earlier, Danny, there is a chance that maybe things were more reactionary when it comes to Mark Rogers and the thing that I think is of all the things that took place this offseason, not the Dan Patrick interview or the comments of the Walter Payton Man of the Year press conference. Really, the smoking gun is that tweet from Adam Schefter with the four teams that Russell Wilson would be traded to, which maybe comes because there was a conversation that took place that saw, and you saw in that Athletic piece, about how Russell Wilson was looking for all these teams that he wanted to be traded to. A clarification gone wrong.
The proportion. Blown out of proportion. If you think that Russell Wilson was on the brink of being traded to Chicago, and that it was a deliberation, and John Schneider was, he was interested in making that deal, and there was a last-minute interjection, like that deal came. If you think that that's happened, yes, that's blown out of proportion. What's not blown out of proportion is the tension that exists between not just Russell Wilson, but the people who represent Russell Wilson, his agent, Mark Rogers, and the team. That tension is not overblown, and that feeling that maybe this isn't the best spot for Russ to win the most. And, hey, it's been 5 years since they've been to a Super Bowl, and maybe Russ needs to be in a place that would value or appreciate. None of that is overblown. Like, that's all real, has existed for years, and has come to a head, and came to a head last February, and might very well come up again, because I don't think that underlying tension has been resolved. I don't think that's unique. I don't think that's unprecedented. I think there are a lot of teams where the people around the quarterback wonder if that's the best spot for their player. But that's real, and that has existed there. And I think because of Russell Wilson's makeup and because of his willingness in the past to bet on himself and say, you're not going to tell me what to do, it's absolutely that the existence of tension between player and team is not overblown at all.
You know what I appreciate? I appreciate the texters protecting their quarterback. There are some people on here right now. You guys are taking it. You're blowing it up and this and that. I can appreciate that. You protect your quarterback. But what is real? This is what has been said and what is real. He said, I am tired of being sacked. He said that. He says he wants more input on personnel. He said that. He said his agent put out four teams that if he were to get traded, this is where he would go to. They did that. You can't ignore the facts. Those are things that were said and done. And if you sit here and you expect us not to react to it or to respond to it, you just believe, then you believe everything politicians say then. They're the most honest people in the world. Like, come on, this is reality, man. Like, he said those things. Did he, now is he back, is he taking a step back a couple times? Yeah, he should take a step back. Because you know what? It's time to go to work now. He's here now. We got through that. All right, now let's live in this moment. But you can't ignore what's been said and what's been done. So I appreciate y'all protecting your quarterback, though. Good for you, Seattle.
It's not just that, though. I don't blame someone for wanting to believe everything that they're hearing, right? Because you want all of this to be gone. So you hear these things, and you think to yourself, oh, thank goodness. This means that things are resolved, and all of the speculation that I have been listening to over the last couple of months doesn't have truth to it. I can understand why someone would feel that way. Unfortunately, it is not as simple as that. And you know with this team, Pete Carroll has said multiple times, the number one rule is you protect the team. You're just not going to hear from other sides of this conversation, and maybe even including from Russell Wilson now that they have at the very least met and talked about it, about what's actually going on beneath the surface.
Yeah. No.
And we heard Pete say that Russ did break that rule, right?
That's right,
yes.
Maura.
He thought it was more of a no whining.
No whining.
Rule. That was the actual rule violation as opposed to protect the team. It happened. And now wondering how he backtracks or repairs it, I think we've seen that. He was stung. He does not want people to think and does not want to leave the impression that he wanted to be traded. That was a problem for him. That's a good sign, honestly. Like, that's a really good sign for everybody who wants Russell to spend the rest of his career in Seattle. That means something. That matters to him. It matters to him staying here or being perceived to want out.
And all this stuff happened, and it's all good. It all worked out in the end, right?
For now.
In relationships, you have moments where you think about getting out. Do I really want to be here? You know, it hasn't been a good year. You know, I'm not seeing changes that we both agreed would be made. You have moments like that. And the good relationships, you find a way to get through. As bad as it gets, you find a way to get through it. And you've gotten through this offseason. Now get through the season. He's here to work now. He says the relationships with Pete Carroll stronger than ever. Who knows if that's the truth, but he's saying all the right things right now. He's ready to work.
Some people and some fans need their team and to believe that their team is the most noble, the most righteous, the most ethically perfect, and that it's populated. Their team is populated by players who have an unending wish to be there.
The good
guys.
And
they are devoted and would play for free and all of these things and just happen. They want sort of the fairy tale version of what we learn about professional sports. They want what we learn about in junior high as everybody's playing for the joy of the game and it's all just completely noble. I'm not someone who watches sports that way. I like the reality and I like understanding it. I understand there are millions of dollars involved. And if a player says, hey, I've got to look out for myself in this narrow window of earning potential that I have and I need to make the decisions, I don't care about the fans or the team nearly as much as I care about myself, that's reality. Yep. And if a player like Russell Wilson, who has the ability to be and started off on track to be one of the winningest quarterbacks in all, says, you know what, I think I can win more somewhere else, he might end up being wrong about that, but that's a real, he's not a bad guy for feeling that way. And the team, if they're like, yeah, man, we'd like it if you whine less, we'd like it if you pipe down and realize that like there's two sides to this and there's some blame on you too, that doesn't make them bad either. These things are complicated. This is a real-world situation. I find it fascinating. I don't think there's a bad guy in this. I don't think there's a villain. I don't feel that Russell did something wrong by speaking up like this. I think there are complications from what he said, and I think that there's an underlying tension that might still exist, but I don't need this to be all squared away in some fairy tale that everybody's singing kumbaya as they jog around Lake Washington every night thinking about, this is going to be the year, and can you believe all those mean media made up all those stories?
End of the day, both sides want to win. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
All this happened because Russ wants to win. And I'm okay with that, man. I'm okay with that. And end of the day. There we go. End of the day. Goodness gracious. End of the day. It all worked out. Russ got a new offensive coordinator, new lineman, got a tight end, bringing back 2,000-yard receivers. Chris Carson is healthy. It's looking good right now, folks. Come
Plus,
on, Hawks.
Off-season Russ. Off-season Russ, that dude's out of here. Regular season Russ is back.
What a smooth landing to this 1 hour with Michael Bumpus. At the end of the day, Michael Bumpus, we love you and we look forward to talking to you next week. Have yourself a great weekend, buddy.
All right, fellas, have a good one.
It is Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle. How are you feeling right now? 206-421-3776. Please tell us. This is your chance to get whatever you're feeling about Russell Wilson off your chest to the whole world. 206-421-3776. We'll hear from you next.